Welcome again. Thanks for coming. I am Bonnie Cable, and I am from Tampa, Florida. Well, from North Carolina, but live in Tampa, Florida, with my husband, Joe Cable. He's not from Athens. I don't have an Athens marital connection. Emily Davis is my Athens connection, and if you know her, you know me. So we're basically the same person, but he's from Indiana, so I'm sorry, he is a Yankee, and I'm trying so hard to pump enough sweet tea through those skinny little winter veins to change that, but it's not working. We live in Temple Terrace, a quarter of a mile from his fire station and from Florida College and the elementary school where I used to teach. And I have two little boys that I now stay home with. I taught elementary school for a few years and then taught at Florida College for a few years also, and now I'm staying home to be with them. So I do not at all feel dejected that my mother did not spend much time on my introduction last night. It's okay, and I'll tell you why. I'm gonna have a Joseph, they're gonna want to throw me in a pit moment here, but when she was giving me my pep talk and talking about this, which I know she did to all three of us separately, and now they're going to know what she said to me, I said, you know, Mama, I'm kind of nervous. I'm only 33. I don't know that I have enough to say at this point. And she said, well, Bonnie, Jesus was 33 years old at a very crucial point in his ministry. So she did compare me to Jesus. I just think you should be ready for that. So no, no, I'm just teasing, but it did make me feel better. So I like to do puzzles. Does anybody else in here like to do puzzles? Jigsaw puzzles? Let's talk. I love that sense of completion when you get that last piece in and it pops in place and you're done and it looks like the box. We went on vacation with my husband's family in the fall to a condo, and there was a puzzle to do there, and they had no idea they had unleashed the beast on me when I pulled out that puzzle box. It was like, move over, I've got a mission to accomplish. And I did that the whole time. I talked every now and then, but you know, they're Yankees, they don't talk much either. So it was fine, but I love it. But there is, so it's so interesting to me how there is really like a strategy for doing a puzzle. What are the steps you do when you're trying to do a puzzle? Tell me, what are some of the first things you do, or you make sure you do what? You do the edges, you get those corners in place, and that's really important. You set that box up and prop it up inside so you can stare at the picture and make sure you're on track. Now, I do not understand these puzzles that are all black pieces or all the same shape. That's very frustrating to me and a recipe for disaster. But I like a good puzzle. It just feels good. So I have here a puzzle piece. What can you tell me about this puzzle piece? I'm a teacher, so it's going to be class. Okay. What can you tell me? It's in the middle. It's not an edge piece. It's not a corner piece. It goes to a big puzzle, and I'm going to have a disappointed four-year-old if he's back home right now trying to do this weekend. It has that one missing. I don't know what puzzle it goes to. I just found it laying on the floor and threw it in my suitcase, so we'll find out. I think it's Noah. Wrong guy. But because we're talking about Moses. But yeah, it's got some purpose in there. It fits somewhere in that puzzle. So we're going to come back to this at the end. Think about that. We get to talk about Moses. He's my favorite. And I don't know if it's, I think it really struck me that first time that I watched that movie, The Ten Commandments, the good one, with Yul Brynner and Charlton Heston. And I asked for that movie for Christmas. I liked it so much. And now I haven't been allowed to watch it. I've been forbidden to watch it because they mess with your head when you're trying to really study for something and you get confused with fact or fiction. So I will try not to reference Nefertiti. She's not in the Bible to our knowledge. But I'm going to watch it when I get home next week and get it all out of my system. But there are so many great stories about Moses, and I like that movie because it just gave me a visual of what a powerful timeline of his life. He had a huge task that God asked him to do, and I love getting to see it, you know, in whatever man-made version that was. It's something that is kind of tricky for us to relate to. So when you hear the preacher or the teacher or class is about Moses, what do you think of? What's the story or the moment or the person that you think of when you hear Moses? Tell me. Baby in a basket, Ten Commandments. Parting the Red Sea. The burning bush. Man, he's got all the good ones. He's the best guy. But there are so many wonderful stories associated with him. But it is a daunting task to take on the character of Moses at a ladies' study. We can hardly relate to what he was asked to do. I have not recently gotten the message from God that it's time to go deliver people out of oppression. From a foreign land of burden into a promised land. Did you get that text message this weekend and you didn't tell us? You can't connect with that. That's hard for us to think about what he was called to do. It was a big job. But we're going to find some things in Moses' life that I think we can make some connections with. He was the man for the job. God used his innate qualities that I think he was born with to bring about something huge for God's people. And that is true of us. We are born with certain traits. There are things that God put in our hearts that are easier for us to do, and virtues that are just more natural for us to take on and put on. And that's what we have to think about and listen to when we're going through this story of Moses. When you are reflecting, and I have that reflection question for you at the top, I'm not going to ask you to share that, but I do want you to think about what qualities you feel like you were born with. That just, if someone were to say your name, what would they describe you with? Or what do you know in your heart makes up the essence of who you are? God put that there inside of you for a reason. And he's always fine-tuning that within us. And he did that through the whole course of Moses' life. It was shaping him, chiseling, breaking off the parts that weren't helpful in those qualities and molding them, polishing them to make him the best version of God's tool that he could be to further God's plan. He does that with us too. We are included in that same plan for God's use for us. Now, we're going to look at Moses' life into thirds. We're going to take his life and chunk it because it's very easy to do the math. 0 to 120, and I only taught third grade, so I cap out at that math, but I can divide 120 by 3 and get 40, I hope. So we're going to look at his life that way. And while we're doing that, it kind of is helpful for you to maybe think about your life in that same vein of what's happening with you in phases. So let's go birth to 40. On your handout, we're right there with waiting on a deliverer. This is the beginning of Exodus. The Israelites, tell me what is happening with them at this time. What condition are they in? What's going on? Talk to me. The Israelites in Exodus. They're enslaved. And it's not just do a little work for us, come clean our houses. This is bad. There's a Pharaoh who does not know Joseph, a new sheriff in town. And I'm not going to touch on Joseph, but this is a huge turning point for the children of Israel. They no longer have that to fall back on, just kind of a good reputation of the kind of people that they are. There's a new guy, and he doesn't care. He takes no prisoners. He is the baddest of the bad villains. And Jafar has nothing on Pharaoh when you're talking about bad guys. He is out to be the number one guy, seeking to control everything. And he sees that he can use the Israelites to really make some progress for building his pyramids and his storehouses and whatever. But he doesn't like when he sees how big they're growing. He gets scared. And we know that he issues a terrible decree. Get rid of the baby boys. We can't afford to have them around anymore. They're threatening me. And although that can look like a play to, you know, they're threatening you, Egypt, we know it's about him. And in the middle of this decree of get rid of the boys, God gives birth to the deliverer that's going to debunk that whole thing, and it's going to blow up in Pharaoh's face with the birth of Moses. The very beginning of his life screams deliverer. He was born to do this. Not only was he delivered by Jochebed, but they saved him for 3 months. They protected him. Now it says, because he was beautiful. But then later we also see that they did that in faith. In faith, they kept him and protected him from this decree. What's interesting to me too, that plays into this fact of deliverance for Moses being the deliverer, is that he is delivered to safety by the waters of the Nile. Those were not safe waters at that time. The waters of the Nile is where they were throwing the baby boys to get rid of them. And yet those waters carried him to safety. Oh, and where was that safety? Not in another land. In Pharaoh's palace. The very place where the decree had been issued for him to not be living. And that's where he's going to live. That is huge for realizing that God's plan trumps anything that man is trying to do. Pharaoh's own daughter is the one that saves this sweet little baby and gets to raise him. Pharaoh's money pays to clothe and feed and educate Moses. And that is the sweetest justice I've ever seen in God being able to make things happen no matter what. And it makes you wonder about what kind of relationship Pharaoh had with his daughter that he let that be okay, because he knew that where did this baby come from? I found him in the water. I'm sure he had an idea that this was a Hebrew that shouldn't be living, but it's his daughter, and he caved. I also think it is just magical that Jochebed gets to be the one to take care of him, to continue to preserve Moses' life. His own mother still gets to be a part of that. You talk about a mother redeeming the time with her son. We don't know how long she was with him, you know, until he no longer needed to be nursed or until the time had come that he was old enough to be cared for. But Moses knew that he was a Hebrew, because he knows it when he's 40 and he steps out there and feels on his heart he has to look at the plight of his people. He knows that. So somewhere along the way, he was taught that those were his people. And Jochebed must have used that time to write on his heart who his God was. Or she must have been an amazing prayer warrior, that all that time she was just saying, don't let him forget. Don't let him forget. And that's so important for us to remember too. I'm about to send my oldest one to school next year and feeling like, I hope I've done enough. I hope he won't forget. But we've got to make sure that we are taking advantage of all of that time. If you only had 3 or 4 years with your kids, what would you be teaching them? Make that your priority. Make that your most important thing. If you only have a short window with your grandchildren, or pretend like you do, live like you do, and it'll make your message that much more powerful to them. So he learns the ways of the Egyptians. We are going to go to Acts 7. Go to Acts chapter 7 to find out what happens to Moses as he's growing up. We don't get very much information from Exodus about this, but I love that Stephen fills in the gaps for us. When Stephen is giving his speech in Acts chapter 7, he's the one that kind of tells us what was going on with Moses back then. And that's just a beautiful testimony to what God is willing to show us. And in all the different ways we can search the scriptures to find out those things that are true. We're going to focus on verses 22 through 25. Is there someone that is willing to read those three verses for me? Genoa, thank you. 22 through 25, please. Thank you. So Moses was trained and educated in the ways of the Egyptians, but he used that might. He was mighty in word and deed. He used it to fight justice for the Israelites. It's part of who he is. He can't help it. It's in his nature to want to deliver, to want to seek justice, provide justice, and wrong the right. And so he knew that Israelite was powerless to the Egyptian. That Israelite is not going to be able to defend themselves, so I'll do it. And he does it, and he takes over and handles the business that he thinks needs to happen. And it didn't work out well, but it says in verse 25, "For he supposed his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand." He already knows his place. He already can tell, this is what I am supposed to do in this span of his life. But now is not the right time. And we see that because of what happens next for Moses. So he's trying to seek justice between the Egyptian and the Israelite. Kills the Egyptian. Okay, maybe we can keep that under wraps. Well, that doesn't last very long. The next day, he sees two Hebrews fighting, and it's in him. He's got to get in there. Oh, no, you want Moses on your middle school bus. That's the only time I ever saw fights was on the middle school bus. You want Moses there because he's going to break it up. And he steps in. He has to step in and intervene because he knows this is what I'm supposed to do. So he jumps in. Why are you fighting? And that's when they fire back with him. Oh, are you going to kill us like you did the Egyptian? And he knows he's in trouble. Because Moses is educated in the laws of Egypt. He knows he's gonna get in trouble for this under this Pharaoh. He would have to serve the punishment for this crime. So he flees to Midian. He has to run away. It's not safe for him to be there, or he could get killed. I mean, he is gonna have to go before his grandfather and answer for this. But look at what he does. Well, you can look with me. I'm going to go to Exodus 2. Exodus chapter 2. He flees to Midian to get away because him trying to deliver got him into trouble. And watch what happens as soon as he gets there. Exodus chapter 2, verses 16 through 19. I need a reader for that. Amanda, will you read that? So he gets to Midian. He's going to take a break by a well because he's tired of being on the run. And he sees some girls basically getting bullied by some shepherds. And he has to step in. He has to intervene. He cannot mind his own business. It's just not part of who he is. And what does that land him? A wife. He gets a wife out of the deal. So this is where it might have paid off. I do think it's interesting that when the daughters are reporting back to Jethro in verse 19 and they say, an Egyptian delivered us. They describe him as an Egyptian. Something about him, maybe it was his clothing, maybe he was just really tan, I don't know. But he has something about him. He might have just been dressed regally because he came from Pharaoh's palace. They described him as an Egyptian delivering them. Later, they'll come to know that that isn't true of him, but Moses was kind of confused or was confused by others as to who he was, where he came from, what do you stand for? But he knows he's born to deliver. He is waiting on the Lord to bring about this quality within him to deliver. He knows he's got to do it. In Hebrews 11, we read about Moses. Hebrews chapter 11, he makes it into the chapter on faith. Starting in verse 23, but we're going to just look at 24 through 26. It says, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Did he have a choice to do this? He chose the low road. I mean, we know it's the high road, but he chose the path of least resistance. This was not the easiest way for him, but he could not deny who he was. He knew he did not belong in Pharaoh's palace as an Egyptian. He had to do what was right to do. And God called him out of this place of comfort to do something big for him. He could have stayed in Midian. At this point, Moses could have stayed there and died a good life, probably longer, as a shepherd in Midian, just protecting the well and doing things quietly there and being with God in his own private time. He could have just sat back and done that. But he didn't. He knew he was meant for more and that God needed him, and only he could do this delivering. But it's still not time. So he sits it out in Midian from age 40 to 80, waiting to deliver. So we've got the guy. We know he's the one. But God is putting on the brakes. He is not flagging him in. He's saying, not yet. And I think that was twofold in purpose. Things kind of had to get bad enough in Egypt for this to come to fruition and really be God's ultimate deliverance. It had to get worse. But in that same vein, Moses had to get a little bit better. He had to be shaped and molded by God to kind of fine-tune that delivering spirit within him, so that he would be utilized as a tool for God and not acting as just an amazing man. Let's look at how he kind of goes from hero to zero in those 40 years in Midian. In Exodus 3, is when he is approached by God at the burning bush. And his response is not what you might think of what we once saw from this very confident Moses who knew he was born to do this. Look at how he responds to God. In Exodus chapter 3, verse 11, but Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Now he knows he's in the clear for safety, because he no longer, if he went back to Egypt, it's a new Pharaoh now. It's another one again. So he would no longer have to serve that punishment for killing the Egyptian. That's another reason why he kind of has to stay away for a little bit and cool his jets. Because too soon, and he would still have to serve that for that conviction. But he knows it's the same people around there. They're going to maybe know who he is. No, he does not feel so good about that. Who am I? I am not equipped for this. I'm a nobody at this point. He had kind of been knocked down a peg or two or ten to get down to a level of emptiness so that he could be filled up by God and not by his own self-serving. Because then if you turn over to chapter 4, in verse 1, then Moses answered and said, but suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say the Lord has not appeared to you. He's really not so confident now that he can do this. And so God gives him those signs. and says, I will prove to them. Throw down your rod. Pick it up. That's a scary thing. But Moses acts out of exact obedience. Now, he does run away scared, but he comes back and he picks it up. But these are things that are showing that God is doing this. Moses is not a special man with magical powers. God gave him signs and wonders to prove to them that he was coming on behalf of God. There are other ways that this story could have played out. I don't know if you've ever thought about that. But there are other ways that Moses could have delivered the children of Israel. He could have stayed there. Let's say that maybe he didn't have to kill that Egyptian. Maybe he just chastised him and said, please don't do that anymore. That was wrong. And went back to Pharaoh's palace. He could have waited things out, risen in the ranks in Pharaoh's palace, and taken over and run that place one day. Then he could really save the Israelites. But who's the hero of that story? Moses. Okay, maybe he does go ahead and go through with killing the Egyptian. He serves his punishment time in prison because maybe he can talk them out of not killing him since he was one of them. He could have caused an uprising, a rebellion from within the underground people. He had strength in numbers on his side. He could have just stirred things up among the Israelites and said, we're bigger than them. We're going to do this, and I know how to do it. Who's the hero of that story? Moses. And that's his problem. That's why he's got to go to Midian and wait. It isn't time yet because it's too much about you and not enough about me. Less of self, more of thee. You've got to sing all four verses of that song for it to work. He had to get to the point where it was none of self and all of thee. So God also sends people to help Moses because he can't do it alone and he shouldn't do it alone, and neither should we. Name some of the people that were a godsend to help Moses through his life. His father-in-law, Jethro, was very helpful. He came along at a time when Moses was very overwhelmed with judging all the people, and Jethro steps in and says, you need a system. Here's how you need to do it. Line them up like this. I'll help you. Let's take care of it. Jethro helped in that way too. Who else helped Moses? Aaron. I mean, Moses says, I can't do it. Okay, fine. Take Aaron. No more excuses. And Aaron was with him all along the way. Not always the most helpful, but he served his purpose well. He did what God needed him to do. Who else? Miriam. Boy, we needed her from the very beginning, didn't we? Who else would have known that that little basket made it to Pharaoh's daughter's hands? And she could have said, oh, I know the perfect person for the job. Let me go get her. And then she stayed with Moses. She was faithful to stay with him through all of the wandering. Pharaoh's daughter was an important part of it. And don't forget about Amram and Jochebed, the reason that we can even talk about Moses today. God sent these people along the way to help further this cause, his cause, not Moses' cause. They're all part of the plan. They're all there to fulfill God's plan for the children of Israel. So, 40 to 80, Moses is still waiting, not feeling as great about himself, but feeling better about his God and being ready to do the task that God has called him to do. So now we're going to be on the second page of your handout. 80 years old, we're in the last third of his life. 80 to 120. Now is the time. That was a long time to wait. And he is not a spring chicken. But that should be encouraging to you. That I think of that song, he's still working on me to make me what I ought to be. It took a long time for Moses to be called into action, to finally be able to use these traits that God had been shaping, reshaping, cutting away, and molding through that time to get him ready to do this. And while we are waiting on deliverance, God has not abandoned us. Not only did he send those people to help Moses, he was with Moses. Oh, don't you sometimes get righteous jealousy over how much, I say that because I don't think it's bad to be envious of the Bible people being so close to God, getting to hear His voice. I want to know what it sounds like. That's amazing to think about. But Moses was so close with God, and God continued to show him that He was with him. We're going to go to Psalm 90. This is the only psalm we have that we can attribute to Moses writing, for sure. So let's see how Moses starts off Psalm 90. The very first verse of Psalm 90 says, "Lord, You have been our dwelling place in all generations." It doesn't matter where they've gone, where they've had to be along this journey, they're dwelling with God and He is among them. Now, God showed Himself to them in very big ways, the children of Israel and to Moses. At the burning bush, I haven't seen one of those lately, but it was a very powerful statement for God to show Moses His presence in the middle of Midian. So I've got a chart there where we're going to talk about God dwelling with Moses, and then we'll make some connections there. At Mount Sinai in Exodus 20, they knew God was there. They heard the thunder and the lightning and the crashing. And they were afraid. It's okay sometimes to feel God's presence so strongly that you're afraid because you know He's there. You know that means that He is near you. The power in the plagues, I mean, this was the driving force, literally, the driving force in getting them out of Egypt. They saw all of these things happening to the Egyptians, and they knew that's our God doing that. He's coming for us. He's trying to get us out of this place. He's here. In the tabernacle of meeting in Exodus 33, God was there as a pillar of cloud. And they knew when that pillar is there, God is there. And the people came out of their tents and worshiped when they saw that, because that was just a mark of God's presence. He's so close to us. On the top of Mount Pisgah towards the end of Moses' life, God is talking to him, showing him the land of promise. He's right there with him, saying, "Here's where it is, right there. See over there? Yep, that's the land that I promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob." And then as they were wandering through the wilderness as a cloud by day and fire by night, they knew that God was with them. He had not abandoned them. And that this was not about the man at the front of the pack. This was about the cloud and the fire above the pack. And in Exodus 33, when Moses is covered by the hand of God in the cleft of the rock, and he said, "I want to see Your face." And God said, "You can't." But he got to see the back of him. And that is amazing that he knew God was right there. And those are very big and grand stories. And it's wonderful for us to be able to look at that and go, "Oh, man, that's so great he got to see that, but we sure don't." But I think we get to see those stories, and that teaches us that God is here among us too. He's not denying us the right of seeing His presence among us here on earth. He wouldn't hide Himself from us entirely. He is among you. He's with you. And there are so many ways He shows that to us on a daily basis. So I want you to think about that, about ways that you know God's presence is here. I'm going to give you 2 minutes quietly to jot down some things that show you God's presence is near you or is here. And then we're going to talk about those. 2 minutes on the side of your chart, God dwelling with you. If you want to just jot down a few of your ideas, we'll share those. Thank you. Okay, I'd love to hear some of the things you came up with. Ways you know God is with us or is among you. That's very special in her quiet time when she's reading the Bible and she hears the birds outside. That's a sign God made those birds. He made that sound. He made our ears to hear it and capable of enjoying it. Most of the time we enjoy birds. What else? Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in me. Don't we strive to live that so that just like we were talking about being a person of comfort, a person of patience, that the world sees us, sees him in us, and we see the beauty of God in those around us. I'm sure you feel that way with your family here at Marion Street. How else do you see God dwelling among you? In the children we have, and the miracle of life even, you know, realizing he made that possible. He wants us to continue that. It's a beautiful thing, and only our God could do that and do something so magnificent and give us the charge, the responsibility to bring them up in the admonition of the Lord. Did somebody else have something? That's so powerful. There really are times that you can feel his arms wrapped around you or just that we are in his presence. He doesn't intend for us to do this alone while we're waiting to either use those God-given talents and traits or while we're waiting for him to deliver us from something. He wants it to be such that you sense he is there, even if he might not be taking the action that you're looking for or moving things along in the way that you expect he would. He has not abandoned you. He has not left you. And that was a great sign of comfort that he showed to Moses. And he does the same for us. Still in Psalm 90, we're going to look at the end of what Moses says at that psalm in verses 14 through 17, how he wraps up that. Carrie Ann's going to read that for us.
Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have granted us, and for as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be shown to your servants, and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands.
Moses is asking for God to show them what it is that they need to do. Now, he had a pretty clear-cut path, so he thought, but he also is calling him the God of mercy, coming from the God who is about to do something pretty harsh to Moses. He's still lauding him as the God of mercy. Establish the work of our hands. We are here. We are ready to do what you need us to do. That's a wonderful prayer that we can pray every day. Establish the work of my hands today. So, is the deliverer ultimately denied deliverance? Moses is meant for the job. We know it. God knows it. He planned his whole life to do this. Get them out of Egypt. Done. Check it off the list. Wander through the wilderness. Done. Just kidding. Keep doing it. Okay. Check that off the list. And then they get there, and he can't go in. I have wrestled with that seeming so harsh. And I'm going to cry, but if we don't cry about God and Jesus, what is worth crying about in life? It has seemed like that's such a harsh thing to do to Moses. He did everything that God asked him to do. Well, not quite. There was that one time at the rock where he didn't quite do everything God asked him to do. And that is such a teachable moment for Moses and for the children of Israel. Because in Deuteronomy 4 is where Moses kind of starts his final address with them, where he is sending them off with his last words. And there are two scriptures in here that are like bookends to his talk. It's like his intro and his wrap up, and they say the same thing. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 through 2, he says, "Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I teach you to observe, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take away from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God." And then in Deuteronomy 32, the end of that, he spends all that time then in Deuteronomy kind of recapping. Don't forget. These are the rules. This is what he said. This is how he's going to take care of you. And in Deuteronomy 32, verse 46, "And he said to them, set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe all the words of this law." Isn't Moses the poster child for this message? Be careful to observe all the words. Don't you change a thing. Because look where it got me. He could lead them there, but he couldn't go in. He had done so much for God. He was such a powerful force that no one else could do it but him. And God equipped him all along the way. But he did that one thing that kept him from going in. But you know what? That is a powerful message to leave with the children of Israel, because Moses is done here. This is kind of the perfect time for Moses to stop this journey with them. He's old. He delivered them where he needed to go. God laid out the plan for him at the burning bush. Here's what we need to do. We need to get out of Egypt. We need to do this. We need to get him to Canaan. He told Moses that much. And Moses did that part. But God did make promises to Moses beyond that as to what was going to happen in there. And Moses did the job of getting them there. But God didn't need him to continue that. And can you imagine what it would have been like if Moses did get to go in? Here he is at the front in the first position, you know, and then Joshua would have been like VP, so he'd be behind him. And he's walking them into Canaan, holding that staff that parted the Red Sea. Who's the hero of that story? Moses. And Moses didn't get them there. God led Moses to lead the people to get them there. The time was done for Moses. It had ended. There was no need for him to confuse matters. Joshua is going to be the new guy. So once they get in there, you are out of the picture. Because you did what I needed you to do. You got them to that point. But don't confuse them when they go in. Who do we listen to, Moses or Joshua? I don't know. It's just Joshua from that point on. But God was trying to build a relationship with the Israelites, between him and them, not with Moses as the intercessor and the mediator. He wanted that connection with them. And so he had to kind of let Moses play that part and then step aside. And don't you think at this point Moses realized that that promised land was nothing compared to that one? He was so close to God. God talked to him. He had to have known at that point, land flowing with milk and honey, or heaven forever with God. I'll take door number two. That didn't matter as much compared to what he had waiting for him. And he wasn't alone when he died. Who was talking to him? God was talking to him. So God loved Moses. He wasn't saying, "Thank you for your service. We appreciate your time," and closing the door. He comforted Moses all the way to the end. Moses wasn't waiting for deliverance from Egypt. He wasn't waiting for deliverance from the wilderness. He wasn't waiting for deliverance to Canaan. He was waiting on deliverance from earth. And so are we. We may not have a land flowing with milk and honey here. And I don't care if I ever find that here. I care that I find heaven with God and the path to it, and that I can stay on it. That I'm looking for that cloud by day and fire by night, and following Jesus who is leading the way. Because Jesus has already delivered you. He's already provided that deliverance, and the path to get there is laid out for you. You just have to know that you're meant to be there, and that God chooses you to have that. And that's what brings me back to the puzzle piece. Moses probably had a corner piece in God's puzzle. He was a pretty important person. But you have a piece too. He cut you out and carved you. And I don't know what your exact picture is on the front, but I can guarantee you it's made in His image. And it's His image that is written on your life story. You can trust in that and trust in Jesus, making sure you are included. He gave you everything you need to have eternal life. Trust in God, the ultimate creator of that grand picture. Even though you might not know exactly how you fit in, and we certainly don't know what that total picture looks like, you are in it. God made you to be in it. He chooses you to be a part of it. He needs you to complete the puzzle. Wait on deliverance from the Lord, from earth. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry, for bringing me out of my comfort zone. I'm not in my comfort zone up here. If I can do it, you can do it. Thank you for the opportunity to share an experience in my life. And I don't want to get choked up, and I pray that the Lord will help me keep my composure. But this will be short, so... But anyway, and I'm so glad that my good friend Deborah is here. Deborah Pepper is here. She is one of my dear friends, and she helps me along the way. And Brooke, where's Brooke? You did a wonderful job. You did a wonderful job. I'm so proud of you. And Miss Paula and the lovely daughters, You've just been so encouraging, and I appreciate that so much. We will have gained much this weekend. Life is about waiting, and sometimes I'm not very good at waiting. My girls will tell you that. I'm pretty impatient at times. I want to do things quick. I want to get it done. But several years ago, my waiting experience began, and my life changed. Nothing stays the same, does it? Except for the Lord. I had lots to learn during this time. I was in my late 30s. There was a lot of stressors going on. I had just lost my dear grandmother, Vera, whom I was extremely close to. And Gwen and I have always been in business for ourselves since we've been married. So we naturally have experienced business ups and downs in the business world. And at this time, we were just beginning to enter the teenage years. So I think some of y'all can empathize with me there. but anyway, for whatever reason, I became very ill. And so my journey began. And these were some dark days. Then I had to wait and wait many years to be able to return to some normalcy of life. And I began to wonder if that would ever happen. I started to experience all kinds of health problems, and no one could seem to help. You know, doctor after doctor, reading books, whatever, for education. But anyway, I went down, and I went down. I didn't have the strength to perform everyday duties, and I had once been energetic, organized, fastidious. I just couldn't do anything hardly, and I'm a little high strung, as my girls would tell you, but I just went to pieces. I wanted to cave in. I just panicked, and I began to doubt, and I became afraid. Where was my faith? And I would ask myself, where's my faith? But God was there. I remember praying for God to take it all away, and I didn't understand why this was all happening to me. And sometimes after a long period of discouragement, you just don't think you can wait anymore. Little did I know that I would be waiting for many years to come. It was as if God was saying, Tammy, you must learn from this dark experience. All I could figure out is that it was time for my life to slow down, and it was time for me to start reflecting on what was most important, my spirituality. For you see, God answers prayers in His own way and in His own time. So I started my journey, and I asked myself, what do I do next? What next, Lord? What should I do to make sure God hears my cry? What can I do to become more spiritual-minded? The first thing I did was make my life right with God and my church family, which was most important to begin a spiritual healing. And strangely, on several occasions when I would open my Bible to read, it would open almost every time to the same verse, and it was underlined. And it said, when I said my foot is slipping, your unfailing love, Lord, supported me. When anxiety was great within me, your consolation brought me joy. I'm thinking, joy through all this? But God's word is a comfort in time of need. And it was. It was for me. One commentary said, of ourselves we are but darkness and cannot see unless we are lightened with God's word. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And I want to share some other verses with you. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. God is never weary or tired. He does not sleep. That is so comforting to me, and that can be comforting to you. Hear, O Lord, and have mercy upon me. Lord, be thou my helper. In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I love you, O Lord, my strength. I say that so many times during the night when I can't sleep. I just repeat that verse, Psalms 18, verse 1. I love you, O Lord, my strength, because He is our strength. James says to consider it pure joy, my sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Paul says in Philippians 4, don't worry about anything. No matter what happens, tell God about everything. Ask and pray and give thanks to Him. Then God's peace will watch over your hearts and your minds. And He will do this because you belong to Christ Jesus. God's peace can never be completely understood. We don't always understand our trials and why things happen, but this experience was a wake-up call for me. It was telling me to slow down and learn to depend on others other than yourself. Tammy, you can't do it all. You can't be supermom. You cannot do it all. So it slowed me down. There were so many blessings, though, that came from my trials, and I want to share some of them. I'm so thankful to God for my husband. He's like a rock to me. And my two daughters who have helped me so many times. I'm so proud of them. I love them. And their husbands. I love my sons-in-law. I'm so thankful. They helped me in my time of need, my girls. My girls learned to cook. They cleaned. They learned to buy groceries. They had to run errands for me. And these things actually helped them to grow up and mature by taking on some of the responsibility. I thought I had to do it all. He sent me friends who helped support and encourage me along the way. And Deborah was one of those friends. Truly, these were blessings in my time of trial now that I look back. I've come a long way since those days, thanks be to God. And I still struggle at times. I still struggle with health issues, etc. But life changes all the time. It never stays the same. But the Lord is our refuge and strength. He also has sent me so many blessings along the way. For just a few, like I mentioned, He's given me my daughters and my sons-in-law. But those three grandchildren, man, it don't get any better than that. And one on the way in a couple of months, Lord willing. They have been like medicine to me and Gwen. They bring us so much joy, and we are so thankful to the Lord. And we praise Him for these wonderful blessings, and I thank Him for all of you and the encouragement we are gaining from such a gathering. I want to end with one of my favorite verses in the Bible found in Proverbs. Proverbs 18:10, and this brings me so much comfort. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to Him and are safe. When we wait on the Lord, we can know that He is there. And we can cast all our cares on Him. Thank you for listening. Thank you.